This episode of AVXL was recorded on August 17th, 2017. We're going to talk about the Netflix-Disney battle, why Star Trek Discovery probably won't stream in surround sound, updates for Vizio TVs and Roku Box, and MQA on Tidal headphones, because me, and so much more.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
We also love music, headphones, speakers, and so many other things.
Gaming, baby.
Gaming, baby.
Got to get my gaming on.
Gaming on a projector with surround sound.
That too. For the console systems, it's pretty good.
Make the children cry. It's
I'm
so
an old
real.
School PC gamer. I have my own little setup that I adore.
You got consoles in your house though too, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've owned, I think, most of them throughout my life. I'm trying to think of the very first console I had. It was a some Radio Shack abomination that included a light gun. It had 6 built-in games, including Pong.
Oh, my goodness.
Pretty freaking awesome for the day, but it was not the Atari 2600 I think I had my heart set upon. Instead, I get the dad alternative. What's a Radio Shack? Oh, that'll work. I will say that was played until it broke. So the fun was to be had. I will admit.
On a completely random note, Spotify. Well, not random because we're talking about gaming.
Yeah.
Spotify is now available on the Xbox One. It was only available on the PlayStation 4 for approximately forever in gaming years.
That's cool. So if you have an Xbox or the game console, then you could just integrate good sound right into your home theater.
Listen
without a lot
while
of
you play.
I always end up going back to game consoles for app performance, if nothing else. I mean, be it my favorite streaming app or whatever, it's just, at least with the main consoles, be it the Xbox or Sony's, the app developers seem to put more effort into their apps on those platforms than they do on almost any other platform. Although I still have to get my feet wet with Roku and see how the apps are developed on that platform in particular compared to, say, like running something off your phone to a Chromecast or other streaming stick device. I often find things are lacking. So.
Surely you jest, things are lacking.
So if you can stream the good Spotify into your home theater through the Xbox,
I highly recommend paying for premium.
And maybe incorporate that, some playback while you're gaming. That would entice me more to try it. Because I'm always surprised. People are like, oh, what songs do you listen to when you're gaming? And I'm like, usually nothing. I didn't even think about it. And it's like, just about every app I touch on a PC nowadays at least has alternate audio options. So you put in your favorite playlist or what have you. And I'm thinking more of the Steam gaming experience on PCs.
Oh, man. I was just thinking about that. We were testing a 240 hertz Alienware gaming monitor with G-Sync.
Oh, nice. Like, yeah. 1440p?
No, it was
1080?
Yeah, 1080p.
High performance, just going for the straight.
Well, part of what was crazy about that is on with the GTX 1070 in my PC, because I had to upgrade to test a 4K monitor, an 8K desktop monitor. I had to upgrade to a GTX 1070 that had dual DPI outputs.
I was going to say, once you start pushing that, yeah.
It's,
can't do it over one wire.
No. It's literally like the very first 4K monitor I tested, which required a similar situation. But I was laughing because for 1080p, for the games I play, I couldn't find anything that could actually stress the card enough to cause tearing issues, because, like, you know, Rocket League was playing at, you know, 237 to 240 frames at 1080p.
That's a beautiful thing, man. I gotta tell you,
once
you enjoy a game at a solid locked in frame rate where it doesn't dip below, say 120 hertz, that the smoothness, the decrease in blur, everything associated with that, just it's how it should be.
It was liquid.
It really is. And not to jump ahead too far, but I was checking out an engineering sample prototype, Zeissworks, the ZWS 4K, 120 hertz engineering sample monitor, currently available for $655 with $160 in shipping. The cool thing about this is, and I was checking this over on the Blurbusters website,
uh-huh.
they were tearing into this to see if without any kind of backlight control, a blinking system or a dark frame insertion system or some other way to improve or reduce image blurring on LCD panels using just the frame rate alone, just the refresh rate of the monitor, and being able to test this 4K 120 hertz panel, what they could do then is move it up to 240 hertz at 1080p. And then this monitor also had firmware and a programmable interface to it where you could even then drive it at even faster refresh rates. They're talking 300 hertz at 720p. And then if they drop it down to 540p, they can take it all the way up to 480 hertz. And they were simply looking at it to see, are there visible differences?
Right.
By simply going from, say, 120, 240, 300, 480, and how that improves the viewing experience overall. And
what was the consensus?
It does. It by in and of itself, increasing the refresh rate mm-hmm. does everything in terms of improving overall image quality. And in particular, the main areas that people focus on. The Blurbusters article goes over reduced phantom array effects. The motion blur I mentioned, persistence of vision effects, that the stay and hold displays like you have with OLED and I want to say some LCDs, where effectively they're showing a series of still images in a row, and that persistence of vision and being able to make it look seamless to you is improved as well. And it also reduced input lag. So as they increase these displays in terms of how fast they can update each pixel, there's a lot of benefits that go beyond, I think even beyond gaming, really. It's just in terms of the usability, even scrolling through a website, things like that will just, it'll look more fluid, more the way it was intended, so to speak. So
not like the soap opera effect on movies?
That's a different issue, but they're now at least demonstrating monitors that even at reduced frame rates or reduced resolutions at least can hit 480 hertz. So
that's pretty awesome.
I think even doing 120 true 120 hertz at 4K is a big image quality improvement, provided you have a game that can actually run at anywhere close to that kind of frame rate natively. I'll go back and look at my classic games, though, like Quake and even Counter-Strike. Man, those are a couple of games that don't require the latest and greatest video hardware, so you can really crank up
I should also not,
the refresh rate.
I should also not bring up movie experiences when we're specifically talking about gaming.
But, totally.
But, you know, I do that.
But we talked about Ang Lee and their experiments and his experiments too with increasing the frame rate of film capture, doing 4K at 120 hertz or at least 60 hertz in terms of the presentation, but capturing it at 120 hertz just to have less blurring per captured frame, simply a faster way to do that. So anyway, granted, this is literally labeled as an engineering prototype, but if you want to be experimental, I'll be sure to include a link to that Blurbusters article where you can check out a 4K 120 hertz engineering prototype that you can actually purchase today. I would say purchase, but it looks like they're taking the pre-orders to build out the number of parts they will need to put together the first run. So
there you have it.
If you want to live on the cutting edge, there you go, of refresh rate enhancement. I think it's pretty good.
Oh, my goodness. Meanwhile, strange noises are coming from my phone. Tidal recently got MQA Master Quality Authenticated. It's an audio technology developed by Meridian Audio's Bob Stewart. And it's the idea that, MQA is interesting, right? They were going to change the way we enjoy music. You're going to basically take everything that came off the board and pack it into an existing audio file. It sounds cool.
Off the top of my head, it kind of reminds me of what, like, say, I don't know, HDR could do in a sense. The content can be well beyond the capabilities of the playback device.
And that's where it gets interesting, right? Because I have playback devices that will deliver MQA audio.
Okay.
And that's part of, well, let me walk backwards through this before we get into MQA. So MQA Mass Quality Authenticated is available on my AudioQuest Dragonfly and has been since I want to say January, February, March, April, May of this year. And so there's a really simple update you do to run that to get the MQA support into that, because you need it to be supported by your playback device. But really kind of changed things for me is Tidal added MQA to the desktop app. You can't use it on the streaming apps on your phone, but if you are a Hi-Fi subscriber, i.e. if you already subscribe for the lossless audio from Tidal, you now have access to Tidal Masters Audio, which is what they're calling MQA encoded tracks. Which has led me to start experimenting with MQA. But, of course, the first problem is you have to find tracks you're familiar with to compare them.
I would imagine, because I mean, this is supposedly adding something beyond lossless.
Yes.
That's a, I'm like, okay, what's...
Well, I mean, I want to call it, MQA is essentially encoding that fits inside of FLAC or WAV files or Apple lossless files.
Gotcha.
You know, the...
if it brings me one step closer to that original recording experience, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, it's also frustrating, right? Because I'm going to listen to a whole bunch of tracks between now and our next recording.
Okay.
Right. Because they've got some Bowie albums on there that I'm familiar with. Eagles, Hotel California, that timeless chestnut of audiophile playback. They got up some Coltrane on there. No Rage Against the Machine, but then again, the current Rage Against the Machine master is a nightmare. It's curious because I started thinking about this also because I went to test a new device that streamed Tidal. And my favorite Amber Rubarth album, Sessions from the 17th Ward, Chesky CD 356, should you see one on sale in your local used CD bin, is not on Tidal anymore. And the Chesky CD isn't in print, so I'm going to have to go to HD Tracks to buy the album, which of course means having that super awesome moment on HD Tracks where I'm like, should I get like the 192.24.44 or no, the 192.24, the 44.1/16, the 96, the DSD version, 2.8 megahertz or the DSD 5.6 megahertz. And I was laughing because, you know, I'm going to basically buy the CD rate version of it. And I'm just for fun, I'll buy a high res version of it. Maybe because it's like $25 for the high res version. I have a really good friend, Jude over at HeadFi, the guy that basically founded HeadFi, and he says he buys the high-res version, the high-res audio versions of the files, not because he can hear any difference, because just about no one seems to be able to actually hear the difference unless you have very special ears and are not in an A/B blind testing, but because he knows that those contain more of the original audio from the master recording. This is also assuming that it is an actual like 192.24 recording, like encoding, and not because there's been cases right. Where they've basically upscaled the CD version. There's been a lot of curious
and
stuff.
A lot
being
of players will
high
do
resolution.
That too. They offer the option for we'll take your compressed to bejesus format yeah. and upconvert that to 32-bit blah-de-blah-blah-blah.
Yeah, that never works. And yeah, like, you know, there's no point, for example, in getting the high-resolution version of the remastered version of Nirvana's Nevermind, because they completely destroyed it in the remastering by competing in the volume wars. But
there's a good thought I didn't even consider. So if your favorite album from yesteryear has gone through several of those edits to make them just right. Simply louder, maybe MQA on that level could then take it right back to that original how it sounded as recorded in the studio.
Well, okay, so
if it's more pure than the engineering flavors through the decades.
We have awoken in a dark wood.
We really have.
Much like the beginning of you know, Dante's Inferno. Let me say one thing first. Different versions of different vinyl albums, CD albums from different publishers, like US and foreign, or in other cases, sometimes from the same, you know, a production company, can sound different and have significantly different mixes and or masters, right? One of my favorite games is you know, when I'm looking for an album, one of the things I'll search around for is like, which is the best version of this album?
Right.
You know, the stevehoffman.tv forums are great for this because there's a bunch of really serious audio nerds there. that can talk about like the 74,000 different versions of, say, the pet sounds.
I also too wonder if it has something to do with like locales around the world having slightly different audio preferences sometimes.
Mostly
too.
It's about whether or not
that happens in the TV industry more than I was surprised to learn that they do often tweak audio slightly.
Right.
For different markets.
In terms of like in terms of stereo albums and vinyl albums, it's often like, oh, we got the right to this, and they've, you know, there's some of the cruelest things I've ever heard written about record companies are for, there's a couple small like vinyl producers, not that I've ever bought any of their albums, where they've just basically taken like the CD and vomited it onto the vinyl and just and made the worst of both worlds, right? You know, it gets more complicated when you look at something, you know, like high resolution audio. I don't know anybody. I have not found anybody who can, you know, A/B me the difference, or you know, blind record pick the difference. You know, and maybe I will find that person.
Cool.
Like I said, like, you know, like Jude says, I like the idea of having the highest possible, you know, resolution format of this, simply because it has more of the music that was on the original master. I like that idea. And this is, of course, assuming that they actually got a decent master copy
exactly.
to create the high resolution file from. That seems to be less of an issue now, right? I am curious because like this Amber Rumbarth album that I love is also available on DSD, which is an audio format I've never experimented with because A, there was no music on it I particularly cared about, and B, I didn't have any DSD capable DACs, but I do now have a DSD capable DAC I'm playing around with. So I will be experimenting with that. But to bring it back to what you were saying, you know, MQA is an interesting idea, right? Because it's, you know, it takes, you know, it, you know, Robert Harley from the Absolute Sound was called the most significant audio technology of my lifetime. John Atkinson, who's, you know, the legend from Stereophile, you know, in almost 40 years of attending audio press events, only rarely have I come away feeling I was present at the birth of a new world. You know, MQA was a big part of some of the announcements at CES 2017 this year, because it's been picking up, you know, gotten picked up by the some of the major labels. But it's a lossy algorithm. It does compression. It's got some licensing things that really piss off a bunch of people.
True. That's one thing. It's going to cost you a few pennies per device to be able to play an MQA track.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I hate going in that direction.
Yeah. Well, you know, so in any case, I finally have an opportunity to find. I have access to some MQA files that I'm familiar with, and I have access to an MQA player. And, you know, I will be curious. We'll talk about more about my reaction to this next week.
I'm fascinated to hear what you hear. Hear your thoughts on what you hear and the differences. So
it would be fun to basically like stream a track off of Tidal to you, and stream a track off of the CD version of a ripped, you know, flack from the CD version, and see if your eyes light up like a pinball machine and you start drooling, which is what would be sort of implied by some of the professional reaction to this, you know. And some, you know, writers I like are basically saying, look, you know, MQA sounds better. I'm curious to see if I actually find a track where I have that feeling. And I finally have a high enough quality DAC and a set of headphones and speakers that if the difference is there, I should be able to hear it if I can hear it.
This sounds like a fun challenge.
Well, you know.
A good test for the technology.
If nothing else, it'll be a good test. You know, I'll run it through my Elax. I'll run it through my... I'll run it through my... Tecton. I gotta say, I'm really impressed with the Tecton speakers. You were.
Oh yeah, the Mini Lores.
You were really.
There ain't nothing wrong with those speakers. It makes me want to look at the full sized Lores.
I want to see if I. I'm keeping my eye open for a sale of a set of used Tecton Pendragons. We'll see how that goes. But
so tasty.
Oh my goodness. OLED game mode update for LG 2016 OLED monitors.
Yeah.
People were looking forward to this. Has lag been an issue on the OLED monitors?
Not really. I guess it wasn't as low as it could have been, but according to John Archer over at Forbes, the new updates have been rolling out to at least customers in Canada and Europe. As far as the 20s... Oh, you feeling okay, buddy? Hang in there, man.
I just hope I get the sling off. You know, get my dislocated
wounded.
Shoulder
the
back
walking
in operation.
Wounded. Anyway, it turns out that LG did push an update to improve the image quality of their game mode. Specifically the game mode that, when enabled, reduces input lag. So when you're gaming, response is quicker, less lagging generally. However, what they did to this new update was remove overall brightness and color saturation in order to better represent peak bright detail. The overall effect being that the picture looks darker, and some people, after receiving such a visually drastic update, were like, what the heck did you just do to my TV? And LG's trying to explain, well, we improved the color rendering and detail of the brightest portions of the picture. But in order to do that properly, yeah, we had to roll back on the color saturation, and the overall picture's not going to look as bright. Yes, so some people, and it seems to, some people like the update in terms of how it makes the image look. Some people would prefer it to be the way it was. And if you're in the latter camp, go into that dynamic contrast setting and adjust that to taste. And generally speaking, increasing it higher will bring back a brighter looking picture with less detail on the bright end, similar to how it was. So this is where LG's engineers made a call in terms of wanting, I think, to approach what their 2017 TVs are capable of doing right out of the box. But it would have been nice had they just made that a more clearly labeled option, maybe leave the default closer to the way it was, and then have a mode that could be enabled to provide enhanced detail in the peak bright scenes that isn't so dark looking.
Right.
But anyway, it's kind of frustrating if you have your TV set up, and then you get a great software update, and you're like, oh, wonderful, things are going to improve. Wait a minute, nothing looks the same. So be aware that if that is the case with you and your 2016 LG OLED, check out that dynamic contrast setting and adjust that to where you think it looks good. Otherwise, you've got a slightly darker picture with better color and detail in the peak bright at the expense of some overall picture brightness. But then that.
Vizio smart TVs are getting an update. Well, they got integrated applications.
Finally.
Well, it's kind of...
It's an oddball TV.
Right, because you've got the Vizio SmartCast. Instead of a remote, they gave you a tablet.
Yeah.
A tablet remote thing, which is maybe what they did with all the leftover tablets after their experiment with you know, manufacturing laptops or something.
Factory full of stuff. Hey, put it where you can. Yeah, but yes, you were actually, instead of using built-in apps on the TV, the remote, a.k.a. the tablet it comes with, was the device that would actually link to your internet, stream that content, cast it, in a sense, then to the TV. So you were limited by the performance of that tablet in terms of resolute. You weren't doing 4K.
Right.
You weren't doing HDR, at least initially, with some of that streaming content. And now, with having the apps built right in, you don't have to make that double leap. You can actually, from your mobile device or whatever, stream directly to the TV itself. And I got to think that will make a lot of owners, I think, of the P and M series TVs a little bit happier. I think it's just a better way to do it. I should at least have the option, especially if you have a funnel, in a sense, or a choke point for your pixels. That is the included remote. As much as I may love having that, you know, separate tablet style remote for all the controls.
It is very fancy.
Still. Let's see. Yep. 2017 M and P series have that patch. That should have pushed to most people already if your TV is connected to the internet. So
there you have it.
Enjoy some streaming.
And the gift that keeps on giving, at least for rumor-mongering reporters on the interwebs, the HomePod firmware has revealed that a 4K Apple TV with HDR is impending. Or at least some hooks for a 4K Apple TV with HDR are inside the HomePod's firmware.
Awesome.
Yeah.
About time.
I mean, the rumors about an Apple TV have been around for approximately forever. But the suggestion inside the tweaks and the information inside the firmware that people are extrapolating would suggest that it would support both HDR10 and Dolby Vision.
Nice.
Who knows? Maybe they'll announce the TV when they announce the iPhone 8.
Did you see the pictures? The fuzzy Chinese pictures of the Apple OLED. Fuzzy,
yeah.
There's an Apple OLED out there. Maybe. Well, we only saw the back. We didn't actually see it running.
I would be very
curious.
And it
looked way thick for an OLED to me. But anyway.
That would be interesting to me if Apple decided to bring 4K content to the iTunes environment along with the television.
And it would be probably an LG OLED. So Another manufacturer going with LG technology for large format displays.
What I would be curious to see is what would be the price of the 4K television for
premium.
Apple.
Although I put Sony at the premium heap. Although if I had access to Panasonic OLEDs here in the US, I would I might have to shove them up to the top. It's a tough choice.
It is a tough choice. Speaking of HDR, Google Play started streaming HDR in July, which I was not aware of. But I think my favorite part about it is if you go to, well, we'll put the link in the show notes because it's like play.google.com/store/search. ?Q=HDR, et cetera.
Just type HDR movies into the search bar.
Fine, be that way.
That's one way to look at it.
But I thought it cool. was, you know, I that's one of the things I like is, for example, inside of Tidal, you can find those masters, those MQA encoded files by, you know, looking on their section for masters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, American Sniper, Sing, the Lego movie, The Secret Life of Pets. A movie that desperately, I think, needs HDR, the Angry Birds movie. I laugh because, like, the Lego Batman movie, I will not laugh at Suicide Squad because I actually enjoyed it. San
Lego
Andreas,
Batman
Gatsby,
movie was originally authored in full 2020.
Mad Max Fury Road. These are all selling for, like, $30, so it's not like you're going to save a bunch of money off of the UHD Blu-ray, which makes me suggest maybe you want to get the UHD Blu-ray.
Yeah, if it comes down to paying $30 for something I'm going to stream, even if I get to keep it in my library for life.
Well, you could you can rent it for $2.99. You can buy it for $9.99.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's just interesting, right? Because if you go to the HDR movies page, it says $29.99. Okay, so you can rent American Sniper for $2.99 SD, $3.99 HD. You can buy American Sniper for $9.99 in standard def, $12.99 in high def, and $29.99 in UHD.
That movie.
Buy the Blu-ray.
I ain't paying that much for that movie, please.
Excuse me. Buy the UHD Blu-ray or the Blu-ray.
Get the triple disc version for on sale for $10.
Oh, my goodness.
Treat your buddies.
Well, it's funny. There's actually probably more UHDs on sale in some place like Target or Best Buy than there is Blu-rays at this point.
That's too much. That's too much cash to own HDR streaming content. Sorry.
Thursday Night Football.
Oh, coming to Amazon. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
I wonder I missed if they did the preseason game last week. I'll have to check. I have to check and see if any of the preseason stuff is streaming.
If you look at the schedule, it looks like it starts with week 4.
Okay.
September 28th. At least it's what's showing up on the Amazon.com website for that.
Yeah.
Along with a lot of links to Amazon products.
Not like all of the NFL.
Or I should say Amazon.
Although the NFL does offer some streaming options, especially next day streaming. Mm-hmm. You can get affordable packages to watch any game, all the games in HD, but live streaming requires a little something else, so to speak. But that's cool though. At least for Thursday night football, Amazon's going to be the place apparently.
Interesting. Something we got a bunch of questions about that I'm going to kind of fold into just a brief discussion is Disney and Netflix and what's going on with streaming. So Disney's got a deal with Netflix through the end of 2018 for Netflix to distribute their movies. So a couple weeks ago, Disney announces that, you know, they're dropping Netflix from their movie distribution in 2019. And, you know, in a $1 billion purchase split across a couple of payments, they're going to buy 33% of BAMTech. So BAMTech, if you're not familiar with it, that's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Major League Baseball decided that streaming all the games was going to be critical. They were right.
Local blackouts.
Yeah.
Well, aside.
Let's not even get into that because you'll start ranting again, and then I'll start throwing things. Then we'll have to rebuild the Hack 5 studio. And but basically, MLB's Advanced Media Group spun off their streaming services into basically they do when you realize the scale at which they're working, they do an amazing job streaming video, right? So Disney's going to start its own Disney Channel. Kind of like a streaming Disney Channel family show oriented thing. They don't know if it's going to include the Star Wars and the Marvel movies. BAMTech is going to work with ESPN to start a, quote, multi-sport subscription streaming service, including live regional, national, international sports events, because I think the writing is on the wall for ESPN distribution. ESPN has been a spectacular source of revenue via cable for a long time, which is part of the reason, you know, why Disney ABC bought all that. So, you know, the first thing is that the Disney / Marvel films are going to be on Netflix through 2018, and there is a lot of good stuff there. Moana's on there, you know, a bunch of the Avengers movies. Not going to get into it right now. Netflix is in negotiations because they want to keep Disney's Marvel and Star Wars films going through 2019 and later, yeah. Right? It's also kind of crazy, you know, it goes both ways because Netflix just signed one of ABC Disney's finest producers, Shonda Rhimes. You might know her, probably don't know her. If you don't know her, she produced Scandal and Grey's Anatomy. And to put it into perspective, her shows have brought ABC something like $2 billion from advertising, reruns, and licensing in the next 15 years. And as far as I know, the Marvel TV series that are produced by Netflix, I'm not going to talk about Iron Fist because
okay.
I'm still kind of depressed about having ground my way through the... I use a different phrase when I'm not recording involving Grudge and Duck my way through that series. But the Marvel TV series is a separate deal from the movie distribution deal.
Okay.
So what all of this means is that, you know, Disney, CBS, everybody on the planet is trying to figure out how to make the most money off of streaming. And, you know, a lot of that involves not wanting to, you know, let the goodness go out on Netflix because they consider Netflix a competitor. What's ironic is the reason Netflix started doing so much original content, started investing so much money in that is because 5 years ago they realized at some point the movie studios were going to get pissed and, you know, stop wanting them to distribute their content.
That
so.
Phenomenal success of some of their shows, too. Their political drama that I can never think of the name of. That, I think, was the wake-up call for a lot of their in-house content. And it was like, wow, if we can get this kind of traction with stuff we're doing internally.
Yeah.
And you know what?
House of Cards, by the way.
House of Cards, thank you. Yeah. I haven't been watching much news lately.
Yeah. It's okay. It's been a rough week for news. We hate fashion.
However, yes, Disney has this amazing library of historical content, and there are many other animation-producing organizations out there doing other great content.
Right.
But
well, there's also the live stuff,
too. You can't
tell
me that Netflix has the cash to bring in, you know, they could create their own animated series.
They already do, right? Because they
work with... Competing
directly. They do a bunch of stuff for DreamWorks. They do a whole bunch of short series around the DreamWorks
it's like,
characters. I mean, the number of times I've seen, you know, various dragons doing various things in various cartoons on various... It's, you know, to put this into perspective, Netflix spends $6 billion a year right now on content. And I bring that up because a lot of people are freaking out. Apple's going to spend $1 billion on original content this year. Well, yeah, because Apple's in the position where it's probably getting harder and harder to draw people to the iTunes ecosystem, and they see the writing on the wall.
Only time I look at
Amazon Prime makes their own, you know, Amazon
on an
makes
Apple
their own
TV device.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to specific apps that have nothing to do with Apple. And
yeah. So, you know, these content battles, part of the reason this is important is because so much of the content we get is streaming.
True.
And it is, you know, there is nothing that indicates to me that we won't be spending, you know, a small amount of money in a whole bunch more places. Over the next, you know, as time moves on, you're going to go from this like $120 a month cable bill to, you know, $10 here and $8 there and $9 there and $15 here, so you can have all of the different services.
I'm not big on stacking multiple streaming services. It's like I'm going to pick a couple at the most, and really, there's two that I currently spend most of my time on.
Well, I've got Netflix. I get Amazon Prime because I need the Amazon Prime for shipping. I've got HBO Go because of Game of Thrones. I did Showtime to get Roadies and a couple other series. You know, but that's like probably, you know, $45-$50 right there a month. So it's still a lot less than the cable bill was, but it's going to be interesting to watch this sort of mutate.
But you're multitasking
time.
That internet connection, and I love it.
Well... I love my internet connection. So yeah, that's not going to change anytime soon.
I think in a matter of a couple seasons, you could see Netflix produce Disney caliber content, no problem.
I think in some ways they already do produce Disney caliber content. By the way, they're producing the Marvel shows, and which are Disney content technically, because Disney owns the rights to Disney owns the Marvel stuff. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to move in a completely different direction. Canon dropped an insane video camera.
It sure did. Pro level.
Yeah.
$30,000 for the Canon ME20F/SH. And that mouthful. What it reminds me of is one of those industrial cameras, a very boxy design with the basically room enough to put your favorite lens on the front.
Right.
The big deal here is this imager is made specifically for video. And it's only 1080p that it records in, but it's using individual light capturing pixels that are about 7.5 times larger used in some of their high-end still image cameras. Mm-hmm. And those expanded pixels allow for insane light gathering capabilities. Low light, literally almost no light. And Digital Trends put up a great article just showing off some of the capabilities of this camera. You compare some of the, say, natural specials or TV shows you've watched showing outdoor scenes shot at night, usually in a black and white scene where they're just flooding an area with infrared illumination, and then the camera sensitive to infrared. Well, some animals can see into that range a little bit, and you could be disrupting their natural, you know, they're going about of things by simply having this insane infrared light shining in the area that you might not be able to perceive, but others could. This camera, on the other hand, can simply do away with that using starlight or just
starlight.
A little bit, a tiny bit of light enables full color capture, even in extremely dark scenes. And that to me is just super fascinating. And I was comparing this with well, we're talking about infrared imaging where you end up with a black and whitish image. Or you compare that to, say, like thermal imaging, which, you know, that's synthetic as well. This is literally just getting by with far fewer photons flying through the air to capture full color imagery at night.
It's crazy because the shot they have there was apparently the photo they have on the webpage essentially looks like a slightly blown out image.
Slightly.
Like you had the ISO set wrong during a bright summer day, except apparently it was pitch black at night.
And it looks fantastic. And granted, this is in a body of a pro-ish camera. So my first thought was,
it's probably a $30,000 camera.
Oh, yeah, it is. I would like to see a pair of goggles made out of these, actually, with that kind of light gathering capability to be able to see color at night. Without in a passive system.
You just want to be able to sneak up on people at night.
Well, that, and I will say the folks over at FLIR offered me one of their new $2,000 thermal rifle scopes to check out. So I was all thinking about, if you could have any kind of imaging, thermal's awfully nice, especially on a rifle scope, but for capturing nature in a less disruptive way, or to just simply, you don't need the lighting you might need on, say, even a field shoot for stand-ups, for producers and things. You could get away with a lot less lighting or to see a scene in greater dynamic range.
Or just to have the animals around the water hole and not have it be that sort of green starlight.
Yeah, that or the infrared illumination that everyone seems to use. I think this is just a fantastic-looking piece of tech, and I hope it makes its way into more productions and more, and I can always see this being used in something like Planet Earth 3, say. I bet you this will be a popular camera for things like that.
By the time Planet Earth 3 comes out, they'll probably be on their second or third generation of these cameras.
It's just cool tech. The ability to do that color imagery in almost no light at all is pretty fantastic.
It's
kind of a cool article that just kind of goes over the difference between the imagery sensors for still cameras versus video cameras and why it's hard to make an all-in-one type imager. It's good to specialize sometimes. And in this case, that Canon ME20FSH will shoot in almost no light at all in color. Oh, I like it.
It's pretty crazy. Hey, we talk a lot about why we like Chromecast or Roku or Apple TV or almost anything more Android TV than we like the operating systems and application environments that are being built into TVs. And I was thinking about that when the 7.7 version of Roku, the Roku OS update was showing up on my box home.
And, you know, it's really simple. Roku and Apple TV and Android TV and Chromecast are all maintained, often over years.
Yeah. And another reason I go back to game consoles, too. Yeah. There's always going to be an update to fix critical errors and things like that.
Oh, my goodness. I also like the fact that, you know, the OS 7.7 for the Roku will now notify you if you lose connection during streaming. And then we'll basically tell you to check your network settings. I do love that screen mirroring on the Roku. You can now choose to allow or block devices from connecting it to it. So if you have a bunch of obnoxious teenagers in your house that want to do Goatsy images during family movie night, you can reject the session.
Who's doing that? Things that never happen in my household.
Well, there probably aren't that many, you know, young people in your house.
Keep that on the notebook.
It's well, that was interesting. You know,
well, I'm looking through the notes here for this release, and it covers a lot of their products, even going back quite a ways.
Yeah,
multiple bug fixes,
all Roku TVs.
Oh, it's just yes, this is what you won't get on a lot of one off devices that you know they're built, shipped in. That's how it is, and beyond annoying.
Yeah, I've been testing Eero 2 came out, so I've been comparing testing Eero 2, the mesh networking device, versus the Eero 1 versus the Amplify HD versus Netgear's Orbi. And the thing about all of these is just about all of the mesh devices have so much better operating system support than the routers.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it's
I mean, I'm using a 2-year-old Samsung 4K TV at home, and I'll be honest with you, the apps built into it are almost never touched unless there's a it's like my last resort to go to those apps. The TV has been updated a couple times this year. Doesn't seem to help it much in terms of I occasionally have to reboot the damn thing or unplug it or so. And then that's Samsung's proprietary OS. And it's kind of up to them and their app developers to make that work. That's why I love Roku in particular. I'll take that above just about any other standalone streaming box there is at this point in time. And given their push now into doing the software for the TV's back end, it's like, who better? It's like nobody else is keeping up with these boxes and making sure things get fixed eventually. So, end of rant, but I'm glad. Yeah. Glad to hear it.
The got a couple of viewer questions. Darren of Hack 5 fame. Just moved into a new apartment. He's looking for the best 4K HDTV that'll fit into a 60-inch space. So 60 inches horizontally. I tried to convince him to a projector. He looked at me like I was on crack. He's got a $2,000 budget.
$2,000. That's a tough budget because that's...
It's not enough for an OLED.
No.
And it's a lot more than some of the really nice entry-level TVs we've seen.
And when you think about the diagonal size of a screen... Mm-hmm. If you can, ignore anything that says 60 inches. Or if 60 is like your sweet spot for the diagonal, you're going to find that it kind of has this odd jump in screen sizes from 55 to 65. Mm-hmm. 60 was an oddball in the way they cut the panels. So
it's not very common.
Yeah, it's not nearly as common as you'll find 55 or 65-inch screens. So with the 65 to 70-inch screens, those will fit in that 60-inch wide space. 70 is likely going to be too big. It's like about an inch wide, and that's just the screen and not even thinking about the bezel. 65 won't completely fill that 60-inch wide space, but it'll leave some room for bezel variations, whether you're dealing with a very thin bezel design, the framing around the screen, or something maybe a little thicker, like an inch or so wide. My honest suggestion would be to save another $1,000 for a 65-inch OLED, if that's practical.
Right.
If not, you're looking at some terrific 4K HDR options from companies like Sony. Their $2,000, I want to say it's the X900. Mm-hmm. That's what it's I would nice be TV. Looking at if I had to spend $2,000 on an LCD today. Otherwise, I would just save my money until I could get that 65. You're 2/3 of the way to an OLED.
Right.
For long term, I would wait another 3 months if that's what it takes to save up or whatever.
Well, it's amazing, right? Because you can get like a 55-inch 4K, you know, TCL for $650. It is not going to deliver the image quality you want if you have.
When you go back to that 55-inch side, then I wouldn't even be spending $2,000 on an LCD. Right. Yeah, I'd be looking at the TCL P series. that 607, I believe it is fan-freaking-tastic. Mm. So it's just in that odd hump of when you hit that $2,000 price point. Wow, you're in 55-inch OLED territory, but 65 is getting you up into $3,000 right now for the very best 2017 OLEDs. So
just saying.
That's my first suggestion. Save your money. Save up another third.
And get the OLED.
Totally.
Yeah. Or wait till next year if you don't immediately need a television.
Totally. Yeah. But otherwise, go value if you can. But otherwise, that Sony X900, that's going to look good. Beautiful.
And put a soundbar on it.
Of course.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, Patrick and Robert, writes David from Golden, Colorado, to ask at avxl.com. That's a place to send your questions to. He says, I'm eagerly awaiting the arrival of Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. Word is they only stream in stereo. Have you heard any buzz about plans for a 5.1 audio stream in time for the Discovery debut this fall? Your loyal Patreon supporter, David from Golden, Colorado. And first of all, thank you for supporting the show on patreon.com/avxl. Our patrons make the show possible. They
yes,
pay the bills.
They do.
And if you'd like to join patreon.com/AVXL, Robert and I would be grateful. So September 24th, CBS All Access in the U.S., Star Trek Discovery debuts. The limited commercials annual plan, or limited commercials plan, is like $6 a month or $60 annually. The commercial free plan is $10 a month or $100 a year. Just to put that into perspective, as our conversations about video rights and the competing thing we mentioned earlier, 188 countries apparently are going to get the new Star Trek on Netflix. CBS All Access is stereo only. And given that hitting play on the official Star Trek Discovery trailer on the official CBS page for the new Star Trek series dumps to a blank screen that says, please visit CBS.com to watch more videos, and doesn't actually play the videos, which I would assume either means it's flash or broken, my hopes are not high that they will mystically and magically pull a 5.1 surround sound track out for Star Trek Discovery in time for September launch. I will just be delighted to actually see, I'm just delighted to see the new stuff.
I want to see it on Netflix. I'll just put it right out there. Hopefully it's waiting for
you're going to have to move then.
Yeah.
Hosco writes in, hey guys, listening to episode 52. I thought it was strange you didn't recommend using your phone to play back FLAC audio whilst on the go. I use my Samsung S8 Plus with a 200GB SD card and my Dragonfly Red, and using the app USB Audio Player Pro is a fantastic solution. If you already have a Dragonfly DAC, it's also a very cheap solution. Cheers, Hosco in Sydney, Australia. And yeah, you're absolutely right. People have mixed results. They either love streaming to an external DAC or a Lightning adapter, or depending on what platform you're on. But you are absolutely correct. That is a good way to go, and you are going to have to download a FLAC-friendly player to do that.
I mean, all Samsung phones, at least for the last 5 years or so, They all play FLAC files. So I think most Android devices do.
However, iOS devices don't do it without DAC, having an additional
app.
But
you have ALAC on Apple. So, and that is an identical format.
I don't want to have two complete sets of audio, one in FLAC for 90% of my usage and one in ALAC for that.
Oh, but it's so much fun to watch DB PowerAmp. I basically output the original FLAC.
Yeah.
I'll take that and I'll have it do the multi-threaded conversions into ALAC, MP3, AUG. Because at least with FLAC and ALAC, those are going to remain full-sized, and those are fairly beefy. But I just compare it to video encoding, where it's so much less data. I don't mind having, and I look at it as just a complete backup.
I've got
the
like
FLAC
900
library.
CDs, dude. So
and that's
it's that, taking up a little more space.
Let
for me,
the computer just grind at it. But that's what I did. I actually from when I had an Apple phone, I would just make sure I did it in FLAC and ALAC, and then whatever else I wanted from that
point taken. I would also like to point out that both of us are big fans of DB PowerAmp.
Oh.
There are lots of tools to create FLAC, but
it's the only one I use.
Yeah, it's
the music converter,
the
disc ripper,
and the batch ripper. I really got into it because of the batch ripper when I was doing like 9 CD-ROM drives at a time. But dbpowerapp.com is the website for that one.
Its ability to tag everything nicely, album art and beyond, as well as do check some comparisons against the works of other folks to make sure that what you ripped is bit for bit as good as it can be.
AccuRip.
Yeah.
AccuRip. It's good. We both paid the money to buy DB Power Amp. We like it. You just did an experiment at your mom's house involving ALEXA from the Amazon and a Harmony Hub and an Echo Dot.
Thoroughly loved it. It is, if you buy just the hub by itself, it'll run you about $80 or so. There's a version that includes a simple remote. Otherwise, you're stuck using your cell phone as the remote control with their decent app, I will say. So the Harmony Hub is just essentially a little black puck filled with, I think, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and a whole bunch of infrared emitters, plus a little external blaster if you needed one for dealing with cabinetry or things like that. But anyway, it has superb support for Amazon's Echo and Dot. So once the hub is set up, the Echo and Dot are simply aware of it, and you don't have to do any kind of odd command issuing in order to get it to all work right. Uh-huh. At that point, it was simply like, blah, 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 turn on or off the TV, turn to a specific channel, and you can also incorporate favorite channels and things like that. You can have it always turn on to a specific channel when you say turn on. Mm-hmm. Lots of little things, but just that ability while you're laying there or when you walk into a room just to go, turn on the TV, and it just does it. It's kind of cool. Or watch Apple TV, and boom, you have all of those ability, what do you call it, where you can basically do scenario-style watching. So if you want the Blu-ray player to turn on and switch inputs automatically and everything like that, Harmony makes that really simple. And that hub was just an easy way, if you already have an Echo or a Dot, an easy way then to add in TV control or more home theater control. So simple, worked really well. While it was added, I threw in one of those Nest learning thermostats too. And I will say that is a very satisfying DIY-ish.
Activities, by the way.
Home activities. Thank you. But the Harmony Hub, it just...
I've been using one in my house for a while. It is shockingly useful.
I've had one for a long time. It's just I never had the Echo Dot pairing with it. And to be able just to have that just fully integrated seamlessly. Like in the case of using like if this, then that, you usually have to say something along the lines of trigger, blah, blah, blah. Trigger being the keyword. But with this Harmony Amazon collaboration, they've done away with that. So you can literally say turn on the TV, turn off the TV, turn to channel 234 and blah, blah, blah. It's just like it's kind of nice, I will say.
There you have it.
And what else am I doing? Oh, you know what? Talking about streaming this episode, I will say I absolutely love the picture quality of MLB TV on the Chromecast Ultra. That's their 4K streaming Google product. Mm-hmm. The picture quality is at least 1080p on that compared to on my PlayStation 3 when I look at the same app, same-ish app. I'd say it's more 720p-ish at best. However, and I think I talked about this too, you lose some things, though, using the phone app of MLB TV, and a few of them compared to the PlayStation platform at least, was selecting alternate audio tracks. Mm-hmm. Like if you wanted stadium sound or the radio guys from one side or the other.
Right.
You can select all of that at will while maintaining the video feed the way you like it on the consoles. Also, recaps and condensed versions of games. Again, this is all available on the consoles, and I don't see it anywhere on the app itself on the phone.
That's
streaming to a Chromecast, say. And also, annotated game playback. That's probably my favorite thing on the PlayStation platform, and I'm sure it may be similar on the Xbox as well, but it will show the game that's already completed with completely annotated across the bottom, like first batter, second batter, here's where certain events happened, and you can just toggle right through. I always go to the first batter in the first inning. It's like click, click, right there. Boom. I'm not listening to the 15 minutes of intro, blah, blah, blah. Get me right to that first pitch being thrown. All of this I can do on the old PlayStation version. But when it comes to the app side of things on mobile devices, that I'm finding it's just, I appreciate that great image quality I'm getting. But at the same time, I'm losing a lot of serious functionality.
Oh, my goodness.
Mildly annoying, but there you have it. I just don't get why there's a difference at all. You think it's a mobile app. They could update that to let me pick and choose what audio I want to listen to. Well, like, I often pick the radio guys to listen to,
right,
over the TV guys, especially if it's a nation broadcast or a national broadcast. But anyway.
Disney, if you're listening.
fix your app. I love it, but make it better on the streaming stick devices or the little pucks.
Oh. San Francisco, there's a HeadFi meetup this weekend. $15 for hours of headphone goodness. If you see a HeadFi meetup in your area, wherever you are around the country, you should go attend it if you're curious about headphones, because 99.999% of the time, the people there are awesome, and you'll get a chance to listen to just about everything. And I was really impressed with all of the vendors that are showing up to the one in San Francisco. But
do you think it's good to hit up one of those meetings if you're new to headphones?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because you'll get to listen to you'll get to listen to more headphones in kind of less time. It'll be overwhelming, I think. I feel comfortable in saying that because there's just so much. There's just so much going on there. But, I mean, you'll have a chance to listen to everything from, like, $50 headphones to $4,000 headphones to all sorts of craziness.
I like it.
I like it, too. I got a link to the HeadFi page in the show notes. Crazy list of exhibitors, right? So it's $15 if you buy in advance on Eventbrite, $20 at the door. People also buy and sell gear at these. One More, Advanced, Estel and Kern, Odyssey, Cardis, EchoBox, Sentry, KN, Focal, Headamp, JDS Labs, Little Labs, Mies Audio, Modular Ears, Mr. Speakers, love them, Noble Audio, Periodic Audio, Quest Style Audio, Rupert Neve Designs,
nice,
Sonoma Acoustic, Taction Technology, Woo Audio, ZMF Headphones, great people there too, JDS Labs, like I run a JDS Labs Element for all of my testing, and I've got one of their new DAX in for review.
That sounds like a great,
yeah,
great way to spend $15, man.
You hopefully you can get out of what you've been committed to and get over to this one.
Yes,
because you don't get to listen to all of this stuff very often.
That's a good meetup.
One last thought before we go: Blu-ray video compression.
Oh yeah,
two pass and other advanced encoding options. You were saying you can get good 1080p results at approximately 1/10 the file size.
You can get decent quality. We were talking about somebody who was ripping Blu-ray movies and how they could save some space. And one of the things I forgot to talk about, at least in terms of if you're going to recompress the file, take a look at the presets built into tools like Handbrake and others. One of the functions that it has is an ability to do two-pass encoding. And that would actually help analyze the bitrate, the needed bitrate of the movie, or looks at the bitrate of the movie as a whole. And it finds those scenes that require more bits to look okay and the scenes that require less bits that they can actually squeeze it a little harder and still maintain good image quality. That type of two-pass encoding is one way to get better results at a smaller file size. So that's something else you can take a look at. I have seen good 1080p results, like you mentioned, at about a tenth the file size. I'm comparing like a Blu-ray at, say, 30 or 40 gigs, get that down to, say, 3 or 4 gigabytes. And that's still a large file size, but it's significantly less. It is not – nothing is going to look better than that full-rate AV signal right off the disk. I mean, you consider that the triple-layer UHD disks are rated for up to 128 megabit read speeds.
Right.
Blu-ray audio is at 27 megabit, at least with the uncompressed format LPCM. Your lossless compressed formats like Dolby True HD and DTS:X and things like that generally use around 7 or 8 megabit at the most. So, yeah, if you're looking to get better image quality from video, a good quality video source, you're looking to either for mobile use or whatever, just to get it squeezed down to something that'll fit on it easily on a USB stick or what have you. two-pass encoding was something I didn't mention, and I was just looking at more of the quick and dirty way to do it. Definitely takes more time doing a second pass, having like an analysis pass over the video first, and then,
but in exchange for time,
intelligent bit allocation for the rest of it. But yeah, if you're looking to get all you can, Take a look at some of those advanced encoding options if you're going down that route. I will say.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, thank you for joining us on AVXL. To find more AVXL, you can go to AVXL.com, or you can, well, tweet at Robert Herron or at Patrick Norton, or
yeah,
follow at AVXL.
Email.
Ask at AVXL. And if you care to support us on patreon.com/AVXL, we would greatly appreciate it.
We love hearing from you.
We do. So thank you, each and every one of you, for your support and for listening. And do us a favor, share the show with a friend if they're into home theater and music and technology and all of that sort of mayhem. Because we're always looking to add more people. To send us email to ask@AVXL.com.
We love it.
All right. We'll catch you next week, everybody.